Coming to you from our studios in Dallas, Texas, and recorded live, Science News is on the air right now.
This is The Promise of Tomorrow, where people in industry keep up with the business of emerging and nanotechnologies. The fields covered in this series of programs will include energy, defense, aerospace, medicine, semiconductors, and more. For the next hour, Colonel Mason will introduce his experts, and you'll be on the cutting edge of The Promise of Tomorrow.
Ah, yes, it is so good to have you back with us again as we explore the exciting world of the business of emerging science, nanotechnology, open innovation. Well, in the first half hour today, we're going to visit with our old buddy Rusty Brockman. Rusty's head of the Green Belt Coalition, which is in central Texas along the NAFTA highway, the corridor that runs through the center of Texas and then goes on into Oklahoma and up into Canada and, of course, down into Mexico. A lot of exciting things are happening in that, and we have asked Rusty to keep us informed of what's going on, and he has agreed to, and so he's back with us today telling us about that. And, of course, we're going to visit the Den of Strangers, get more wisdom from somebody a lot of us never heard of, and we'll see if you've heard of the one today. We're going to visit our Fountain of Useless Information we have here on the set in the second half of the program. And today, a very serious science question that we don't think the Fountain Spirit will get. Maybe you will. Okay, and of course, at the end of the program, listener comments and the voice of reason. Some people tell us that the voice of reason is their favorite part of the show. And those of you listening on radio, remember now, you can also hear us commercial-free online at promiseoftomorrow.biz. Promiseoftomorrow.biz. And before we get into our interview today with Rusty Brockman, we need to step over here into our very busy newsroom and see what's happening with today's news. This is where our reporters from around the world send us things, and then it's posted on the clipboard, and we call them news clips. So let's see what we have here first. Here's an important word of the Homeland Security Conference is seeking technical solutions. The important conference scheduled for Boston area issues a call for papers. It's called the 2012 IEEE International Conference for Technologies for Homeland Security. And they're asking for technical papers to be submitted for consideration at the conference. The focus of the call for papers, according to this, the posters and tutorials are included in this, is on emerging technologies in the areas of cybersecurity, land and maritime border security, biometrics and forensics, and attack and disaster preparation, recovery and response. Happens every fall. The conference is going to be held the 13th and the 15th of November in Waltham, Massachusetts. And here's a story by Alicia Shang. She's the Associated Press science writer, and she got a hold of us from Los Angeles. A glimpse beyond our solar system is revealing that the neighborhood just outside the sun's influence is different and stranger than expected. And she reports that one oddity is the apparent amount of oxygen. That there are more oxygen atoms, according to the story, floating freely in the solar system than in the immediate interstellar space, or the vast region between the stars. Scientists were unsure why, according to this story. It said that it's possible some of the life-supporting elements could be hidden in dust or ice. This is a quote by David McComas of the Southwest Research Institute in San Antonio, Texas. He said, we discovered this big puzzle, that the matter just outside of our solar system doesn't look like the matter inside. The discovery, of course, seems here that it comes from NASA's Interstellar Boundary Explorer spacecraft. And you probably remember that was launched in 2008 to study the chaotic boundary where the solar wind from the sun clashes with solar gases from interstellar space. Now, here's a study published in Nature Geoscience from the University of Exeter in Oxford. In this study, new research reveals how the arrival of the first plants 470 million years ago triggered a series of ice ages. Fascinating, fascinating study. The team set out to identify the effects that the first land plants had on the climate during the period, which ended 440 million years ago. And during this period, the climate gradually cooled, and that led to a series of ice ages, according to this. The global cooling was caused by a dramatic reduction in atmospheric carbon, which this research now suggests was triggered by the arrival of plants. The story says that this had a dramatic impact on the global carbon cycle and subsequently on the climate. It could also have led to a mass extinction of marine life. Okay, just a reminder also while we're talking about it, the 4th Annual Green Technologies Conference is going on in Tulsa, Oklahoma, the 19th and 20th of April, and we hope you'll show up for that. And down the road from Oklahoma, in Texas, the electronic systems operator for most of that state, ERCOT, announced that it would not be able to meet its reserve targets this summer and would fall far below it in 2014 without efficiency adoption to relieve the grid. Texas may be faced with rolling blackouts as early as this summer. And so the Greenbelt Coalition has come along with a bunch of different things to counteract that. And we're going to hear today from Rusty Brockman. He's head of the Greenbelt Coalition out of New Braunfels area. And we haven't had Rusty on the program for a while, but decided that we were going to have to dial him up. So let's get out of our busy newsroom and get on the horn now with Rusty Brockman.
Stand by.
But it's been a year since I've caught up with you, and I really think about you because recently, of course, ERCOT, that's the electric systems operator, of course, for most of Texas, announced that it wouldn't be able to meet its reserve target this summer and would fall far below it in 2014. And without efficiency to relieve the grid, Texas may be faced with rolling blackouts as early as this summer. Have you heard anything about that?
Well, I've only heard that those are possibilities of things that may happen. And there's a couple of things that, and I'm really not an expert on this, but I do know since I got appointed by the governor to the GBRA board here in Seguin, which is the Guadalupe Blanco River Authority, mm-hmm. and because of the drought and the things that we're looking at with the issues with water, and then of course of some of the other governmental things that are going on with with the greenhouse effect of the fossil fuel gases and all that, we're in a whole heap of trouble in Texas because of the coal-fired plants. And so with the water being one issue, for not enough for cooling, and with having to look at how some of the power folks are going to deal with the fossil fuels being used in a lot of the plants, we've got some really tough decisions to make on how we deal with that. I know natural gas is becoming probably the fuel of the day nowadays, since there's so much of it being found. But mm-hmm. to try to get those online, along with the solar, and of course the wind has already taken place in some places, but we're going to be really struggling to meet some of those deadlines to keep that from happening, or what you were mentioning about the rolling blackouts in 2014.
Yeah, well, the power companies don't want to build any new power plants for a while until they get it all sorted out about what kind of power they're going to want, and of course the solar can only do so much, although it's taken some big strides, I understand. But if they're not going to build any new power plants, and certainly no new coal plants, conservation is absolutely the essential here, I think, isn't that right?
Absolutely. Conserving our resources, as well as when we turn the light switch on, to conserve the power. And when you look at the air conditioning during the summertime and heating during the wintertime, it's imperative upon us as folks that inhabit this land to do better at at how hot we have to be in the winter and how cool we have to be in the summer so that we can help keep those things from happening. You know, CPS, City Public Service in San Antonio, has done a great job in putting, I guess their money to where their mouth is about putting more solar on the ground. And so they've even promised by 2020 that they're going to be about 25% less dependent upon their coal-powered plants within their system, and they'll be taking some of their plants offline by that percentage so they can go to the solar to make up the difference. And so that's good for us in our neck of the woods down here around San Antonio and in South Texas. They also realize that the encouragement of doing more nuclear there on the coast here in Texas is probably not going to happen anytime soon because of the disaster in Japan.
Yeah.
So they're looking at kind of rolling away from the nuclear focus and trying to really push the solar, which is a great idea. And I'm not sure the percentage of their plants that are on coal. But it is that 25% figure is pretty accurate at what they're going to try to be less dependent on coal and more dependent on solar by the year 2020. So that's good news. And of course, if we all work together to try to help conserve, I think we can help them meet their goal by 2020.
Well, it certainly looks like nuclear is really, 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 really on the way out now. I mean, it's almost like Fukushima was the death knell, and for a while there was so much talk about bringing it back. And then on top of that, as you mentioned, all the gas reserves, the natural gas reserves that have been discovered in this country, enough, the president says, to last for 100 years, and the people in the industry say it's more like 200 years. And so we're really in pretty good shape as far as gas reserves. But solar is making such tremendous strides. And can you tell me what they're doing down there in that area to encourage solar? Is there breaks or encouragement for people to put them on their rooftops?
Well, there's more tax abatements, tax credits that are going on with City Public Service in San Antonio. They're offering some of their customers some breaks if they use the home solar units. I do know that what they are going to be putting in place with the new 400 megawatt field that they've just approved, and then the new company that's going to be coming to San Antonio providing jobs and doing manufacturing of the panels, is going to encourage more of that to take place in the San Antonio Bexar County area. We're looking in this whole region, I think, at the opportunity to be able to really encourage the solar to be at the same level or probably even higher as the wind is in West Texas, probably in the next 2 to 3 years. And that says a lot for what CPS is doing in San Antonio. They automatically have really pushed the envelope to become more effective with their solar power and doing more solar research. And so I think that's going to be something that's going to happen in the San Antonio area. Now, Austin has already got a field online, as does San Antonio, but Austin is really touting their Pecan Street project and teaching people about conservation. Austin is also offering some tax credits to their customers. The smart meter approach, I think there's a lot of the co-ops in our area, like Pernalis Electric Cooperative is using the smart meters to a high degree, so is Blue Bonnet Electric Co-op out of Brenham, so that folks can actually watch what they're using and see if they can't challenge themselves to conserve more on the power that they use every day. So there's a variety of things that are happening. You mentioned the natural gas and, of course, the Eagle Ford Shale. Down in this area has really not only put us on the map for jobs and be able to realize that there is a wealth of gas reserves here in Texas, but the other side of that is that if you can begin manufacturing and refining that reserve and that natural gas into a product that can be used. Not only will that help our power plants and the production of electricity through the power plants, but also it gives us the other option of being able to look down the line at what we can do with natural gas-powered vehicles, especially since that's something that, you know, some of the companies are looking at doing more of, to be able to provide the natural gas at fueling stations within the communities in this whole area. And I know Laredo has done that already. Their local community has gone to fleets of natural gas-powered vehicles down there. In fact, I think they just upgraded one of their fueling stations in Laredo. And so they have some really positive things going along those lines. There's some discussion, too, Colonel, about water being provided for the Eagle Ford Shale work down here coming off of a desalinization opportunity. And so I know that's a long, probably several years out, but there's some studies going on now to see if some of the gas-fired peak plants could not be put along the coast to create an opportunity to do a desalinization plant, and mixed in with that natural gas-fired plants would be the opportunity to do solar and wind power, and by sharing it with those three resources could make it more affordable, even though it's very expensive and takes a lot of energy to do the desalinization of the ocean water. So there are some opportunities there, but I think that's kind of where we're headed. But that's a study now that's going on with UTSA and the University of Texas, Guadalupe Blanco River Authority, and SAWS, and several other folks in this area that are studying that really hard.
Well, Rusty, I would think that that solar would really lend itself to desalinization, since solar is what desalinates in the first place, giving us our rainwater. And it just seems to me that that is a perfect opportunity for solar. And you had mentioned a little earlier about the increased job opportunities of the people, certainly the installers are going to be installing these panels. But you said something about manufacturing the solar panels down there. Now, doesn't China have kind of the corner on solar panels, and they're the ones that are massively exporting solar panels around the world?
Yes, they are. Yes, China is doing that, and probably at the most affordable cost of anyone that's manufacturing the panels right now. And that just happens to be a plant from China that has made a commitment to San Antonio and CPS to bring one of their manufacturing plants to Texas, to San Antonio, and begin manufacturing those panels here. So that puts us in a position in this area to be able to provide the panels at a more affordable cost for residential and even commercial usage, to be able to have those installed. And you're exactly right about the jobs. Even though the jobs that I initially spoke to about the Eagle Ford Shale and looking at those roughnecks in the oil patch and those kinds of things, there's going to be a huge need for more and more technicians to be trained on the installation and the service of the panels for residential and commercial usage. So as this company becomes a neighbor in South Texas, when they start manufacturing the panels and more people begin purchasing those for residential and commercial use, it is going to provide more jobs for people that can work on those panels and do the installation and the service.
That's a fascinating thing. A Chinese company is coming here to Texas to build solar panels to sell what in America? Are they going to sell those around the world too?
Right. They'll continue to manufacture those, and of course they're, you know, they've got such a large population where they're manufacturing. They could probably continue to manufacture only and not ship anything out of China, and just do it for their own country, and still be able to do really well on the open market around the world by doing something in places like here in Texas or other communities around the country. So we're pretty fortunate to be sitting right outside of San Antonio, where CPS has done a great job in recruiting these folks to come, and also making a huge commitment for another solar field, the second one that I'm aware of that's 400 megawatts.
Wow. So you're still leading the Greenbelt Coalition. We haven't spoken to you in a year, so bring us up to date. What's going on with the Greenbelt Coalition?
Well, we kind of took a little hiatus there for a while we kind of regrouped on exactly how we were going to continue to move forward. And then at the beginning of this year, we have been able to hook up with Mike Burke in San Antonio with the San Antonio Clean Technology Forum, and then also Laura with the Austin, Laura Benold with the Austin Clean Technology Forum that she's got going there, and several other folks in this general area. We are going to do a forum, and I'm glad to hear that you and Laura are going to get together on doing some specific interview with her so that can be talked about. That forum will be the first event for 2012 that the Greenbelt Coalition will be involved with as we try to promote more of the clean green technologies and energy, sustainable energy activities here in our part of the state. Now, we're really going to continue working to make this IH-35 corridor between San Antonio and Austin, and maybe even going as far north as Killeen to Fort Hood, the clean energy capital of Texas for sure. Got a lot of folks along this corridor that have been involved for a long time. The University of Texas in Austin and UTSA in San Antonio are both doing a lot of research. We've got our community colleges with Austin Community College and Alamo Colleges in San Antonio that are doing some training programs in all kinds of clean, green technologies, especially on the solar side. And I'm glad you mentioned that a few minutes ago, because both of them have training programs for folks who would like to get trained to become skilled technicians in the installation of solar. And then we've got the ATI, the Austin Technology Incubator or Institute in Austin, and that'll be working at, we'll be working with to try to see how we can continue to promote the development of new companies, new opportunities and technologies, whether it be software or actual businesses that would be putting all kinds of different types of clean green technologies to work in our corridor. So we're going to continue as a Greenbelt Coalition to support those efforts, and then see how we can come up with ideas on how we can be maybe even a more important player on the conservation side with all of our resources, whether it be, you know, the solar or wind, or whether it's water, and create a more better understanding within our public about the need to conserve energy as well as water, so that we have that for the future in the central part of Texas.
You had mentioned about the natural gas refueling stations going in, and you might be interested to know that there's a company called Clean Energy Fuels that plans to put in 150 natural gas refueling stations along the I-35 corridor, and I'm not sure how far south they're going to go, but they're partnering with Chesapeake, who I understand is a major investor in what they're doing, natural gas company, which is a big investor in it, is what I understand. You might benefit by connecting with these people and seeing if there's some way that the Greenbelt Coalition can work with them down in your area.
Well, that's a good point. That's exactly one of the things that the Greenbelt Coalition was focusing on a couple of years ago, and we feel confident that's going to move forward in using people like Clean Energy as a...
So many fascinating things we learn here on the Science News Radio Network. We're going to take a break in a couple of minutes and then come back in the second half hour. So don't forget to download the second half hour of The Promise of Tomorrow. We appreciate your being with us. I'm your host. I'm Colonel Mason. Okay, as we walk to the break at the half hour, we're going to pause at the door of the Den of Strangers, where we keep locked away all of the wisdom of mankind. In the Den of Strangers, will we meet today?
Sir Jacques Danton, we ask that anyone refusing to give personal service or to furnish arms shall meet the punishment of death. The tocsin we shall sound is not the alarm signal of danger. It orders the charge on the enemies of France. To conquer, we have to dare, to dare again, always to dare. Convaincre de l'audace, encore de l'audace, et toujours de l'audace. And France will be saved.